Hey everybody, and welcome to a minisode of Pod Stallions. I'm Brian, and not freezing his ass off to the west is Jason.
Hello everybody.
And our subject this week, we're by the way, look at us, we're doing two in a week, is the passing of veteran actor Dick Miller, who was mainly known for playing a character named Walter Paisley, and we'll get into that. Before we get into that, though, Jason went to a special event last night, and I thought it'd be interesting for him to talk about it.
I had sort of a last-minute invite to this. They had a Stan Lee tribute that happened in L.A. at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood, and Kevin Smith was emceeing it, and Clark Gregg was there, and Mark Hamill, and Seth Green and Michael Uslan or whatever his name is.
You ran into Marty Abrams too, didn't you?
Lauren Shuler Donner. I ran into Marty Abrams, and he was sort of staring at me as he walked toward me, and I don't remember if I ever met him or not, but I thought, well, this is probably thinks I'm somebody else. Probably thinks I'm Paul Newman, so I should probably say something to him. And so I just said, "Hey, Marty," right? And he's like, "Yeah." And put his hand out. And I shook his hand. I said, "Hey, man, congratulations on meeting someone like that." Brian Hyler's a good friend of mine. Oh, I love Brian. Brian's great. I love Brian.
That's awesome.
And I said, "Yeah," and I said, "You know, really pleased for you, and really cool to have Vigo back on the shelves, and big part of my childhood." Oh, thank you very much. Oh, that's really great to hear. Thank you so much.
Hmm.
That was kind of it.
I think he's at a show in L.A. this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. They're doing some kind of awards show at that celebrity con that they have in L.A., you know, the one you've talked about, like at the New Beverly Hotel?
At the New Beverly Hotel.
To be at the Beverly Garland Hotel or something like that. I'm not sure
I know what that is.
Okay. There, you know, the one where Booth Coleman would be at. And
Okay. I see. Yes. That was a comic. They called it like a comic and something convention or show or something. They did it once a month, and they did it at the Shrine.
Is where
they used to do it.
Yeah.
Like third Sunday of the month kind of thing. And yes, you said Booth Coleman, I knew what you meant.
Yeah, you know, I'm probably the only guy that would freak out over Booth Coleman. But what I thought was funny is you told me about this event, and you told me about some of the celebrities. So I Googled it, and I started to look at the – and, yeah, I wasn't surprised to see Kevin Smith in every photo. But the media seemed to forget who was – like, Corey Feldman was often second billed. And, you know, I kept thinking, like – Lawrence Fishburne's there, and James Gunn is there. Why am I looking at a picture of Corey Feldman?
Wait a minute, was James Gunn there?
According to this article I read, yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't see him. That would have been really... I kind of got in and out, went in and out of the theater a little bit, because it was kind of everybody. But yeah, Fishburne was like... The invite that I got mentioned Vincent D'Onofrio and some other people. I didn't see Fishburne's name on it. So when Kevin Smith called his name, I was like, holy shit, that's Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
And he was great. Hamill, you know what you're going to get with Hamill, like when he tells a story or he, you know, he acts it out and he, you know, does Stan's voice and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Fishburne was just cool as shit, you know, and he was talking about, I think he's from Long Island, I think. And he was talking about what a comic freak he was as a kid, And I just was like, oh, I had no idea. Like, oh, my God. And he's listing off, you know, titles from the late 60s kind of thing. And then this was the, I thought, the winning line of the night, is he said, oh, yeah, because Smith was like, oh, were you really a big comics guy? And he's like, oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I was, I'd say from, like, I don't know, the age of, like, 6 or 7, probably till about, I don't know, 14, 15 or so, like when I went off to make Apocalypse Now. And I just screamed. I screamed like, yeah! Like, Apocalypse Now got a mention in this thing. And just because he was, you know, people forget, like, that movie took so long before it came out. Like, he was, I think he was 14 in Apocalypse Now. Lawrence Fishburne.
Larry Fishburne. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's telling these great stories and stuff. And then I forgot, because Tom DeSanto was there and said, you know, Lawrence was going to be Beast in the first X-Men movie. There was a scene that they had planned out in the Danger Room. And Fishburne, I think, was cast as Beast. But then Fox said, no, it's too much money. Forget it. Didn't do it. He mentioned when Tim Story, who did the two Fantastic Four movies, the Silver Surfer thing was getting rumored. He approached Tim Story and said, hey, man, Norrin Radd.
Yeah.
Norrin Radd. And Tim was like, what? Who are you? Like, I don't think Tim knew what that meant. He knew what the Silver Surfer was, but he didn't, like, steeped in Marvel stuff. And Fishburne was like, really? You don't know? That's the Silver Surfer. That's his name. That's his name before he becomes the Herald of Galactus. And, da, da, da. And he starts riffing on all this stuff that he knows from Marvel Comics. And that's how he sort of approached him and said, I am Norrin Radd. I have to be. He knew that. I think that Doug Jones was cast as Silver Surfer in that movie. But Fishburne approached Story to do the voice.
And he was a great voice. He was really good at that.
He was fantastic. And say what you want about those two movies. I'm not a huge Fantastic Four guy. Never have been. I don't think they're abominations.
Nope.
I think Chris Evans alone is worth the price of admission, I think, and maybe a little bit of, you know, Ben Grimm.
Yeah.
But in the second one, it's just the fact that we're watching a movie with the Silver Surfer, you know, the Human Torch and the Silver Surfer, like, fighting and stuff was, I don't know, Surfer, I think, kind of was the best thing of both of those.
I like those movies because they were movies I could bring my kid to, and at the time there wasn't a lot of superhero fare that you could.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And you just, you know, when you saw, I didn't really know who Chris Evans was, I don't think, before that movie, and then you just see him and think, this guy's going to be huge. Like, he just walks away with every scene he's in.
I thought that movie had the thing in the torch perfect. I even liked the... Mm-hmm. But the Mr. Fantastic and Invisible Girl were terrible casting.
That's kind of a cliche that everybody says. Like, if you could just take the stuff with those two,
mm-hmm.
and make another movie, you could take all the bits from one and two and make a great movie without the other two.
Yeah, the Mr. You know? Fantastic is and they didn't seem to understand Dr. Doom. They got a good actor, but it was weird.
And that whole thing.
Hopefully yeah, the third
but,
time's
but
the
you
charm.
Talking about that? Yeah. Well, apparently it wasn't.
No, the third reboot. I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. But he said something that was kind of cool too. That the audience just exploded when they were talking about comic book movies. He said, "Well, people forget that I was in what really was the first comic book movie that you could really see what these things could do, you know." And everybody was sort of like, what's he talking about? He said The Matrix. Mm-hmm. And then the audience just erupted, and you know, it kind of made sense what he was saying. Like, that was kind of the blueprint for where things could go and what you could do in a comic book movie with the crazy shit they did in that.
Yeah,
but he was great. And then he read The Raven by Poe. I've been out in the lobby for a bit, and I was on my second or third drink, and then I came back in, and I hear him up with the microphone in the corner, and I'm hearing, like, quote The Raven, and I'm like, what is this? What's this, like, people just bringing out their stuff and doing some poetry or whatever? And I turned to a guy next to me, and I'm like, hey, why is he reading Poe? Guy's like, oh, I think Stan was a big you know, Edgar Allan Poe fan or something.
Ah.
Oh. Okay, that makes sense. And then RZA was there from Wu-Tang.
Yep, big fan.
And he just got up to the mic and read that great editorial that Stan did about bigotry in 1969.
Oh.
And about what a bigot is and about being prejudiced and yada, yada, yada. And then he just started talking about all the stuff that he loved and the Kung Fu comics and stuff. It was just, that stuff was really cool. And then there was a party afterwards, and I only remember parts of that. No, I'm kidding. I didn't get
scenes
that crazy,
missing?
But it was lots of fate, like the Michael Uslan guy was at the party. And then, this was weird, too. This was weird because there were people walking around doing, like, cosplay. Like, there's one guy that walks around who looks like Stan Lee. He looks like, you know, 75-year-old Stan Lee, okay? And he just takes pictures with people. Like, that's where cosplay is at. So
yeah.
I was at the top of the stairs heading down to the restroom at the Chinese Theater. And there's this guy, like, three guys at the top of the stairs. And I thought, oh, the line? I guess how long the line is? Like, this is ridiculous. And I just one dude, and I'm like, oh, he's got kind of a blade thing going on. He looks a bit like Wesley Snipes, you know, whatever. And they're taking a couple of pictures up at the thing. And I'm like, oh, and the guy looks at me, and I'm like, hey, man. And he bumps my fist, and I give him a quick fist bump, and I walk past him, and I'm like, God, boy, that guy really did look like Wesley Snipes. And then at the after party, I'm standing at the bar next to Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
He's just walking around this. And by the way, when I say after party, this wasn't like the governor's ball after the Oscars kind of thing. This was like, you know, Wesley Snipes would be A-plus status at this thing. The next one down would be, you know, the guy that owns Mile High Comics or something. And that's not a dig on him. I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
there's nobody at this thing, okay? And all of a sudden, he's standing next to me at the bar, like flirting with women and stuff. That was weird. Wesley Snipes was suddenly at this thing. Anyway, it was interesting, and I do think that it spent, much as I love Stan Lee and that huge part of my childhood, I think it spent a lot of time, kind of making it seem like, you know, it was a one-man show, sort of.
Yeah.
And that's when I kind of said, okay, I'm going to go out in the lobby and start to look at Captain Marvel woman out there, see what her deal is. And that was it. That's my story about
What's
going to Stanley.
Yeah, it just sounded neat. I actually wanted to hear the story, and I hope people liked it. So we should get on to our subject matter. Dick Miller passed away this week, and he's one of those guys that's like, he really got around in his career, and the news of his passing was relayed to me by director Jim Warnowski, who put it on his Facebook feed. And I think that's fitting because Warnowski is, of course, a Corman guy. And I think Dick Miller was the prototypical Corman guy. And I first started to know who he was because a friend of mine, Brian, was a big film geek. And he got me into a lot of his stuff, and he was a big fan of A Bucket of Blood, which is probably Dick. You know, it's Dick Miller's tour de force. He plays a character named Walter Paisley, and I don't know if you've ever seen A Bucket of Blood.
Forever ago.
So
a very crappy
comedy. It's a dark comedy, the same way Little Shop of Horrors is. It was shot.
Mm-hmm.
On like $5 and in a few hours, just like Little Shop of Horrors was, and Dick Miller's in Little Shop of Horrors as well. And it's about a artist who it's about a busboy who becomes a critically acclaimed sculptor when he actually kills his landlady's cat and covers its body in clay to hide the evidence. And when he is pressured to create similar work, he becomes a murderer. I'm reading the description so I don't screw it up. And of course,
as you do,
as I often do, it's just kind of that little bit of slapdash madness that never went away. You know, like Corman made a lot of very cheap films, but for some reason, he also kind of made memorable very cheap films. you know, and it ended up being a lifelong relationship with Corman, because after that, you know, Corman's proteges, who include people like Joe Dante, would end up, like, I think Dick Miller's in everything that Joe Dante ever directed.
I think he is. I know he's in The Howling, and that was, 81, I think, with The Howling?
Yeah.
I think that might be the first thing I ever saw him in, without knowing it was him. That's probably the first thing I saw him in. And then, of course, Gremlins. He had a more substantial part in Gremlins.
You know, I've never seen Gremlins.
But yeah, I think, you know, I have to say something on air here in front of the world. You just, after all these years and all our conversations and all I know about you, you still keep me on my toes. You're still a bit of an enigma. This is like the second episode in a row where you've mentioned something that I'm just stunned that you haven't seen. Not oh my God, he didn't like that thing. Just that you've somehow not seen it.
Yeah.
I just, that's extraordinary to me. So you have never seen the 1984 film Gremlins?
No, but I've seen Gremlins 2 about 180 times because working in Germany, and my hotel had two options: German movies, really, really hardcore pornography, or Gremlins 2 in English. So I managed to figure out what was going on and watch it like over and over again while I was working in Germany. But yeah, I think we all know
what choice I would have made in that German hotel room.
Oh, I didn't didn't flick around, but
but after you saw Gremlins 2, there wasn't a point like when you got home or a year later or you came across it again and thought, you know, I should see the first one just because I thought the other one was okay. Maybe I'll see the first one and see what the deal was. What was the other one that you said an episode ago or whatever you said that you hadn't seen? What was it? It was something that it was an 80s thing, like an early 80s thing, I think. And you're just like, you know, I've never seen that.
Oh, The
and
Fog.
I was just shocked.
The Fog.
The Fog.
Yeah.
It was The Fog. I just was shocked. Like, it's you know, it's creepy. It's got, you know, fog in it.
It's a Carpenter film. I should see it. I don't know. I don't think there's been many opportunities for me to see it.
I see.
Like, I just, you know, one of those things where it just didn't come out. Gremlins just didn't really appeal to me as a concept. I can remember that I was 14 or 13 when that came out, and it just didn't look like something I wanted to see.
Until Germany.
But I think the first time I saw Dick Miller in a film was Heartbeeps, the greatest movie ever made.
Wow. What other show can you get Heartbeeps name checked on? Than
I've told this story before, but I won a bet with my dad. My dad was a bit of a gambler when I was a kid. It was like, you get to take me to see Heartbeeps. And he was like, listen, man, I'll order a pizza right
now.
It's
not worth it.
I'll do this for
not
you.
Doing it.
And I dragged him to that. And even I was like, oh, man.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But I mean, but it had Alan King. I mean, it might be Alan King's finest work as that, you know, robot with the cigar chomping agent robot or whatever it was.
Oh, it was terrible.
That's some Joel Grey, Remo Williams level stuff there.
Yeah.
As a supporting character. Yeah. So he's in Heartbeats. I don't remember who he was. I don't remember. When I think of Heartbeats, I think of Starlog.
Yeah.
The cover of Starlog.
Yeah, they gave that the cover.
Like, skipping it that month.
No, thank you.
Yeah, your arm sort of went out to the camera. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to get Cat Fancy instead.
Yeah.
I don't even have a cat.
Excellent choice.
But I'm not buying that thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I might have missed that one. So I don't know who he was in that. But when did you sort of when did you sort of understand who he was? That he was this, not just this face that you recognized, but that, you know, he to me, he is sort of the wink at the audience. He's the, you know, he's the thing, he's the cameo, you know what I mean? Instead of cameos from, like, super famous people, it was more of a cameo, like a good luck charm that Dante would put in things and different people started using, and you knew that face.
I'd say the late 80s when I started kind of reading up on, like, schlock cinema, and his name would mm-hmm. start to come up. And then I realized that he was the guy my friends and I quoted all the time in high school, because we loved that line, I think it's in The Terminator, where, you know, Arnold's, he's the pawn shop guy. Arnold orders like this plasma rifle, and Dick Miller's line is like, "Hey, only what you see here, pal." Like, and we just thought that was funny, you know, that's actually a kind of a funny line. And we used to say that all the time in high school. And, so yeah, it all started like that, Dick Miller. And then it became a thing with me and my friend that every time we were watching a movie, it was like, "Dick Miller," you know, like it was a spot Dick Miller thing. And
Where's Waldo kind of thing.
And I remember, actually, this is when I was first dating my wife, she was big into V. And I tracked down some, you know, bootleg copies of V, the miniseries, and V, the Final Battle. And mm-hmm. of course he's in that. He's in the Final Battle miniseries. And I don't even know if he has lines, but I mm-hmm. just remember the scene, he's forging documents or something. And he's just, like, working on a computer. And I was, like, you know, in front of my, you know, then new girlfriend going, "Dick Miller." And she just looked at me strange, you know, because that there was, she wasn't in on that in joke. But he's in a ton of stuff. I mean, he has a long history. And he's often Walter Paisley by people who get the joke. And the most recent thing that I saw where he popped up was I started watching Wojnarowski's Chopping Mall, which is something I actually quite enjoy. It's if you haven't.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's in that?
Yeah,
he's in that?
He's the janitor. He's Walter Paisley, the janitor.
You know, that is on, I think that is on Hulu or.
Shout Factory has it.
Amazon. Shout Factory. It might be on the Shudder, that Shudder streaming thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think I just saw that, and I think I put it in my queue. So
yeah. Oh, I love
that.
Chopping Mall. It's. I mean, you're not going to get smarter.
VHS.
But.
Right. It was a VHS rental, I think, when I was.
Me too. You know, yeah, I rented it in high school, and I remember thinking it was going to be this gory slasher film, and it was much more fun than that.
It was one of those, yeah, it was like one of those titles that was, you always feed the box, and, you know, like Weekend Pass.
Yeah.
You know that?
Oh, Weekend Pass, which I've never seen either, surprisingly.
That's more understandable than having never seen
it. No, not really. If you knew me in mid-1980s, I was quite the connoisseur of screwballs and, you know, those kind of classy pictures.
What was the picture with I'm gonna say the one with John Candy and Eugene Levy, and they were cops. Was it Armed and Dangerous?
Armed and Dangerous. I saw that in the theater.
I think I might have seen it in the theater too. I remember the two of them showing up on
Saturday Night Live.
Letterman.
Yeah.
Right. It was Candy and was Flaherty in that too?
No, that's Going Berserk.
Okay, that's right. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. Oh, I know my SCTV, sir.
Man.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you one.
Okay.
Who out of SC... Oh, shit. I don't think I forget the name of it. There was a great movie made, Canadian movie, thriller, Christopher Plummer. It's called Silent Partner. Christopher Plummer and Elliot Gould.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, The Silent Partner. I think it's filmed at the Eaton Center.
And who out of SCTV was in it?
Candy.
Yes.
He got his own spin-off movie from that.
He did?
Yes. They made his character as... Yeah. And, you know, you used to be able to find... that movie in every dump bin in Canada, you know, a big picture of modern John Candy.
But, right, yeah. From a 1976 movie or whatever.
Yeah.
What was the spinoff movie? Was it a comedy or was it a...
It was, yeah, he was...
Silent Partner is pretty hardcore. That's a hardcore movie.
Was that... I think I'm right. I could be wrong. He did get a spinoff movie from a movie he did in Canada. And now, was it called... Maybe I'm wrong. I swore he got a movie where he plays a cop.
I hope you're right. Yeah. I'd love it if you were right. Well, he was a bank teller in Silent Partner.
Okay, no, then it was a different movie I'm thinking of where he played a cop.
Okay.
And then they made him his own spinoff movie in Canada that, you know, went nowhere. Gosh, I wish I could remember it. But yeah, you're right. He was a bank teller. Silent Partner, I've forgotten all about that. It's fun to watch because it's like vintage Toronto.
And it's just, you know, you think it's sort of this lighthearted kind of thing and... Not lighthearted, but just sort of, you know, a PG sort of, and then it just takes a turn.
Okay, the film,
Christopher Plummer's character just
got dark.
Holy
He's killing
cow,
people,
it's
right?
Got, yeah. Very, oh my God, in horrible ways.
Yeah, but the
and it gets really dark.
The film's,
but it's a great idea. He's a mall Santa that hands over a thing. Give me the money note to the teller or something. He's got a gun or whatever. Because he's dressed like Santa. But somebody, Elliot Gould's character knows who it is. For some reason, either the piece of paper or something, the imprint of the paper, or something, he thinks he knows who this Santa was. And he basically ends up trying to blackmail Christopher Plummer, who's the bad guy, saying, look, I know it's you. I'd like half the money or whatever. And then things go wrong or something. I forget. Yeah, it's a pretty good movie, but it's dark. But Candy, that was, I think, I remember reading about that years ago. It was one of the first, you know, sort of
the first,
you know, slightly dramatic, like a supporting thing that he did in a movie or something.
Well,
like
the
that,
first
right?
movie that I remember him in is a movie called it, and you just jarred this memory, and I had to look it up. It's called It Seemed Like a Good Idea at a Time, which was this farce for Stephanie Powers, Anthony Newley, and Isaac Hayes. And I remember watching this as a very young kid. And he played a cop named Kopeck. And I guess that movie did well enough that a year later, he got a spinoff movie called Find the Lady. And he's Kopeck the cop. And I have no memory of that.
I remember.
Yeah.
But it's one of those boxes that I remember.
Yeah.
Find the Lady.
You'd find it
remember
as
that
soon as John Candy
box.
Was popular. That came out. It's like, and this is a personal fascination of mine, and I've shared this with a few friends. Burt Reynolds did a movie called Shark. I think it's in 1968, well before Reynolds became a box office sensation. And I became obsessed with, I think the movie's public domain, or very easy to release. And you couldn't go into a video bin without finding a copy of this movie. And it all had different, you know, sometimes it was a picture of a shark and a picture of Burt Reynolds, like from Smokey and the Bandit. Or sometimes it was just a really bad drawing of Burt Reynolds. And I became kind of obsessed with that. And I actually made a collage at one point of all the different covers I found over the years. It's like, it's just a special kind of crazy, you know.
Have you seen the film?
Yeah, well, I
Did
like
the
film.
The film.
It's actually a good film.
Oh, okay.
It's a heist movie, and yeah, there's sharks in it, but like every box portrays it like it's a Jaws ripoff, and it came out 7 years before Jaws. So, but yeah, it's not a bad film. In fact, I kind of like it. But it just I've always been fascinated by the marketing of it. You know. And the same with that John Candy one, because they would just use all these different, you know, stills of John Candy, like clearly in his personal life, and it would say "Find the Lady." So we should get back to
those weird sort of airbrushed, like sort of painted drawings that seemed like there was a photo somewhere underneath there, but they sort of painted it this harmless. Yeah,
we always knew
grin.
It was bad
yeah.
if there was no box. Photo on the back of the box. That was always our go-to.
Right.
Like but we should get back to.
Dick Miller. I'm sorry, but you see, this
is what happens.
Kind of, you know,
people don't seem to mind.
Dick Miller
this,
did a lot of stuff.
But the one thing I remember is also the Flash television series, the original one, not the current one. Dick Miller had a kind of recurring role as Foss Knight, who, if I recall correctly, was kind of a reformed criminal. Was that his role on that? I think that's who he was.
I mean, that kind of rings a bell. I actually picked that up not long ago for like, you know, $5 for the set.
I was very fond of that series, by the way. I liked it.
I was too.
Yeah.
That was a good time. Like, that was like, oh my God, a year after Batman, there's a Flash series, and it's
a little too,
you know, and then those guys ended up,
you know,
doing The Rocketeer.
Yeah.
They ended up writing The Rocketeer, which is one of the greatest comic book movies of all time.
And I don't know what those guys do now. I think one of them passed away, didn't he?
Oh, that might be. I know Dave Stevens did.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. But so you think, like, in the late 80s, you kind of
clued into who he was, yeah. Because I was getting that whole scene of Corman. You know, I saw Hollywood Boulevard,
right.
And I started to kind of, in my late high school years, I started renting all that stuff that made me curious, you know, Invasion of the B-Girls and Hollywood Boulevard. And I started to realize that, you know, hey, he's in a lot of this stuff. And yeah, that's when I kind of picked up on it.
But he was generally, it's funny seeing, again, back to the Stan Lee thing last night, Clark Gregg still referred to himself as a character actor,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was pretty fantastic.
But he is that guy.
Because even though he's even though he's a lead on that series or whatever, I mean, he is a supporting actor, supporting character actor. He pops into things, you know, and it's a very noble, you know, like that great time in the early 70s, you had these guys that in any other decade maybe would have been character guys that became the leading guys, like, you know, Gene Hackman and, you know, even Pacino and these guys, you know, Hoffman, they have weird faces and, you mostly do the character stuff, not the handsome leading man sort of thing, and that was great. And Dick Miller always seemed to me to be like, you know, he's a handsome guy.
Yeah.
Like, he could have, you know, but isn't Bucket of Blood sort of the thing that he's kind of in throughout as a movie the most? Because most of the stuff he did was character stuff, or he'd pop into a scene here, a supporting person in a show, whatever, but was that like the thing that was his sort of vehicle, or did he end up doing more stuff where he was the leading guy?
You know, I think he just ended up popping up everywhere. And he became a very well-known character actor. I mean, you know, the guy's got so many credits. I mean, he's in two Mannix as different photographers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He never really seemed, and I like, it seems like he was never without work either. I mean, just year after year. But yeah, I think he came from that generation, though, where, you know, you do a TV gig here this week and you do a movie here and then you go back and do a TV gig here.
Right. And you're always working.
You're always working. And he just seemed to be obviously very likable and somewhat beloved at the end of it, I think.
Well, I think, too, that, you know, you've mentioned Joe Dante a few times. Mm-hmm. I think probably everyone can agree that even though Dick Miller probably would have had a great career and been in loads of stuff, and he was prior and, you know, after and during and all that, Joe Dante really, I think Joe Dante's work with him made him a name and recognizable to geeks and, you know, fans.
Well,
and stuff
look at,
because he'd pop up and,
There, everybody. I watched my Facebook feed blow up with Dick Miller from people who knew him, and the trading mm-hmm. card from him, his Gremlins trading card, popped up.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say a dozen times today. So yeah, mm-hmm. I would have to say that your Joe Dante elevated his career.
Yeah,
yeah,
and just and made us kind of more aware, and suddenly, because, you know, you've got a fairly significant part in Gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a year or two later, you go to rent The Howling again, and you go, oh, there's the area again. Oh, is this Joe Dante? You know, and you just started to notice, and then you started to go backwards and realize who he was and just how many things he showed up. And then Terminator was, you know, 84. Yeah. So it was lit up.
Twilight Zone, the movie, he played Walter Paisley.
which one in Twilight Zone?
It's a Good Life. Yeah, the Dante segment.
Yes, that's right.
Of course, yeah.
That's right. And Mumy's in that too.
Yeah,
Mumy shows up sitting at the diner or whatever. Was he in The Burbs? He must
have been in The
Burbs.
Of course, he's the garbage man.
He's the garbage man.
Yeah.
Right.
He wore a lot of jumpsuits in his career, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an underrated movie, I think. That's a movie that I saw in the theater when it came out, and I didn't know what to think of it when I came out of the theater.
I love The Burbs.
I just thought, there's funny stuff in it, but I could not get a handle on what this movie was. And, you know, Tom Hanks sort of gets beat up by the end of it, and it's weird, and it's kind of dark. And it wasn't until the second time that I saw it that I really started to appreciate just how insane that
There used to be a TV show on the Hamilton channel. I think it was called Zigzag. And it was two chubby guys, and they looked like they gave them, like, no dollars. And they would just, like, run around at 6:30 in the morning and, you know, paint faces on their stomachs. And I recognized the one guy. He would do car commercials and stuff in, like, in Toronto. And then...
Yes.
But my friend and I watched The Burbs, and my friend goes, "The neighbor's the guy from Zigzag." And it was Rick DeCommon.
Rick DeCommon still played Zigzag
at the time. Like, it just never stopped rerunning. And I went home and I was like, oh my God. And then he never showed up again in anything. Like,
he showed up. He's got a small part in Groundhog Day. That might be the next thing I saw him in. But I thought he was so funny in The Burbs. And here's what I remember about Rick DeCommon, or however you say it. And I might have told this story before, so forgive me if I've told this story before. But you know the E channel? You know,
yeah,
E Network?
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I'm talking about? E? Before it was E, in like 89, when it first kicked off, it was called Movie Time.
Yeah.
And it was very sparse, but you'd find it on the dial and like, oh, who are these people? And you know, their faces, you eventually started to recognize that were hosts and did things. And there was a night, it seemed like it was live, but I don't think it was. There was a night where they had him on with somebody else because the Burbs was coming out, and he was riffing on all the clips that they were going to show. He's like, what's coming up next? And he was like improvising the whole thing. And it was one of the funniest damn things. I don't know if I could ever find that.
Yeah.
But he killed me.
Yeah, he was,
you know, and I
just
seen The Burbs.
He stole that movie. And
he totally stole the movie. He's great.
And I mean, I think the next thing I saw him in that was a major part was Scary Movie. And it was like, where the hell has he been?
Oh, wow.
You know?
Did he do stuff in Canada, though?
I don't know.
Was that it?
Like, he did stand-up. I remember watching his stand-up special, which was funny, by the way.
I did see him do stand-up.
And you know, he would be in Spaceballs, and apparently he was in Die Hard. But he just didn't have the spotlight that he did in The Burbs, where, you know, I thought he was in...
He's in Ghostbusters 2. He's a city worker in Ghostbusters 2. When they're trying to pretend to, like, go down beneath the sewers and do something, they're like they're city workers, and he shows up from the city and he does something.
He's in Gremlins 2.
I swear he's in that.
Weird. He's in a lot. He's in two movies with Dick Miller.
Joe Dante.
Yeah.
So he was in The Burbs and Gremlins 2.
Yeah. I wonder if he's in.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. He was. And you said he passed away. He got sick.
62.
And...
He died. Yeah. Diabetes. I really liked him, and I really liked The Burbs.
I thought he was great.
I showed my daughter The Burbs.
Yeah.
About 6 months ago, I'd say, and she really liked it as well. Like I said, this is kind of a weird movie, but I think if you stick into it, it's dark and it's really funny. And there isn't a performance I don't like in that movie. I love Bruce Dern in it, and I even like the aforementioned Corey Feldman in it.
Yeah, everybody's great. The scene when they go to the house and they're, you know, aren't they offered like pretzels or something or pretzel sticks?
Yeah, it's just awkward, and just, it's Brother Theodore.
Just awkward and weird, and Brother Theodore staring at them.
Yeah, Brother Theodore did just, all the... independent international trailers. So
right.
Like, as blood is coming out. And he had such a unique voice that it's so wonderful. You know, like, I didn't know
He'd show up on Letterman all the time.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
Who is this guy? Like,
that's how I kind of first got to know him. Is he was one of Letterman's,
yeah.
You know, like Harvey Pekar. He would just go on.
Right. And just sit there and be weird.
Yeah.
But I think the Burbs, when The Burbs hit, I think the studio kind of went, what the hell did we just do here, because, you know, I mean, Gremlins has dark stuff in it too, but Miller's in a lot of Gremlins, isn't he? I haven't seen Gremlins
He has an aggressive part. I think he's in both too.
I think he's the same guy in both.
Yeah, he's the same character in both. And I remember, you know, by the time I finally saw Gremlins 2, which was like the mid 90s, I knew who Dick Miller was, and yeah, he had a big part.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Murray Futterman in both of them. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And he, and so, so what did you, have you ever heard anything from Dante, or like what was it about Miller that he sort of latched onto?
I thought he was his good luck charm. You know, the way like J.J. Abrams likes Greg Guttenberg to be in all of his films, or, you know, directors can be a cowardly, superstitious lot.
True.
Yeah, I just always thought...
Like Adam Sandler with, what's his name? Rob Schneider?
Schneider. Yeah, that's the exact same thing as Joe Dante and Dick Miller.
Sorry. No, that was a joke. I'm sorry. But Dante, being a movie freak and a horror buff and stuff, he must have known him from Bucket of Blood.
Absolutely, and of course Dante's a Corman guy.
Yes, that's right. That's what do you think? Do you think Corman's going to be? Do you think Corman is going to? You know, when the end comes, is Corman going to be more fondly remembered for his work, or the springboard that he gave to so many different talents that came through there? And
I think it's 50-50 because you know, Corman was also a bit like, you know how a lot of people credit the Ramones. Because the Ramones would play their town and they're like, shit, I could do that. And then they all decide.
Right.
I think Corman had that potential as well. I think he fostered talent and he knew good talent, and he let guys, you know, he inspired a lot of guys. But I think his range is more than that. I think he inspired a lot of people to become filmmakers.
Well, yeah, and he had that way of saying, here, I need something, take a camera, go shoot this thing. Or we got a picture that's going to open in the fall. It's about acid. Go take some acid, grab a camera, write a script. Buy some acid from Jack Nicholson, grab a pen and a notebook, write a script, Fonda Spree, direct it. Let's go.
Roger Corman's like picture. ASMR when he talks for me. He's so soothing. He has possibly the most incredible diction ever. And,
Expect from a guy that worked by the skin of his teeth and was always on the go.
Made schlock and exploitation, and you're just like, wow, he's well-spoken.
Well, the reason we made that film, what was fascinating about that picture was that I initially, like, he's just, you got to turn the volume up.
And he's got a patriarchal tone about himself. Yeah. Like, you want to sit semicircle on the floor and listen to him. I always found that kind of shocking about Corman.
Yeah. Me too, and what I love is that speaking of the cameo thing, then Jonathan Demme did it with Corman and sticking Corman in a bunch of his movies. He's in the Manchurian Candidate remake.
Yeah, I just remember he's telling a homophobic joke in Philadelphia.
Yes, and in I was Philadelphia. That's right.
And I was like, that's Roger Corman, you know, who she was like, who? You know?
One of many times she went, who? What are you talking about?
We've lost count. Yeah.
But yeah, see, this is what happens when you talk about Dick Miller, is that he was surrounded by a lot of stuff that we love and a lot of people that, you know, he worked with. I mean, he was in a lot of great stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, whether Dante just grabbed him and stuck him in something or not, he was, you know,
it's funny how it vacillates from like big budget Hollywood films, like The Burbs. And then he's on like an episode of Weird Science for the USA Network.
Right.
You know, like he was a working actor.
Yeah.
In fact,
journeyman.
He still. Post his death has two films that have yet to been released.
I always wonder about a guy like that. If he was he was always working, but like I wonder, was he doing all right? You know, did he have a nice little house or something? I always wonder about people like that. Because you know, when you're a kid...
He lived in Toluca Lake.
Yes, he did. I did know that, actually, because I used to live in Toluca Lake. But when you're a kid, you kind of...
Yeah, that's why I brought that up.
You see faces and you think, you know, oh, there's so-and-so in that thing. I haven't seen him in a while, whatever. But we talked about this before, where we just wonder, you know, what happened to Gary Sandy for the past 35 years or whoever. You know, they're doing something, but Gary Sandy's always the example I use, where, like, everybody else off that, well, not everybody, but a lot of people off that thing, you know, went off and did more stuff, and, you know.
I forgot to tell you, I don't know if you saw it, but I was at a thrift store, and I should have bought it for you. There was, you know, dinner theater glasses?
The what now?
And it was a dinner theaters will give out complimentary glasses, and I have one from the Stage West Dinner Theater, and it's Norman Fell.
Oh,
you know,
right.
And that was, like, that was my favorite glass for years when I was, you know, out of college. I was at a Talese or something, like one of these, you know, kind of, and there was a Gary Sandy one. And it was very obviously like an older Gary Sandy, like he had a mustache and you know, the drawing of him, he's a little heavier. And it's like, so that's where Gary Sandy was.
And let me get this straight. And you didn't buy it?
Yeah, I don't know what was going on.
What the hell? Did you have a stroke?
And yeah, it was just one of those days where we had to go and the line was long and I was like...
This is what I mean about you keeping me on my toes. Because if they come to me and they want to do the biography one day, I'm going to go, did you think if there was a Gary Sandy glass here by chance, let's just say, would Brian have bought... Oh, hell yeah. Brian would... It wouldn't have been, it doesn't matter what the cost. Brian would have been in his basket and he'd be out the door with it. Well, he didn't buy it. Like, really? I don't think I knew him at all.
I want to tell you that Brian bought that glass.
I thought I knew Brian, but it turns out I don't know him at all. He's never seen Gremlins. He didn't buy the Gary Sandy glass. And he's never seen The Fog. Who was he? It doesn't make any sense.
You know, Jason, I've made up everything I've ever done on this show.
See? I knew it. I knew it. It's not even your real name. I'm sure.
I've never seen a Professor Who. Yeah.
Well, next time you see a Gary Sandy dinner theater glass, would you please think of me?
It's one of the greatest regrets of my life. Yeah,
It's got to be right up there.
Yeah, I will. Not only I will ship it directly to you.
All right, good. Be on the lookout. And you know what? Knowing you,
I bet water tastes really good out of it.
You'll probably find it. You post pictures of things like was at the flea market and found a. You know, Dalek Rodekin in the box from 65 or whatever. You find stuff at garage sales and thrift stores that nobody can find, that eBay can't find. You come across the wildest stuff that's just out in the wild at these, wherever you're going to these things that I've never seen in the wild.
Well,
you just come across a, you know.
I'm lucky that my wife loves going to these places too. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah, so, you know, and yeah, I think I actually like going out and looking for stuff more than getting stuff.
Yeah, the hunt.
The hunt, yeah. It's one of the reasons that I stopped, I took a break from doing the new toy reviews on my YouTube channel. You know, I did like 22 of them in a row, and it started to feel a lot like scrapbooking to me, you know, and no offense to people that love going to the store and getting themselves a treat. I don't, but it's, I kind of love like finding things. I don't know. I'd rather talk about a weird thing I found at a flea market in Germany because it's just,
right.
So I'm just taking a little break from all
that. Well, it's also more sort of finding the things that are not common or that aren't sort of, you know, not common, but, you know, that are like the Gary Sandy glass.
Yeah.
You could write a whole chapter on that.
I find that very interesting. Yeah.
What was the show? Was it just him telling stories?
Oh, no, he was in a production. Like, and I'll have
to, was he doing Mark Twain?
Well, it
or
was like, you know, two Yentl? For the road. Like, you know, my pinnacle would be to find a Bob Crane dinner theater glass.
Oh.
Yeah. That, yeah.
Yeah. Now you're talking. I'd like, you got to go to the seat of your... you gotta go to the seedier parts of town for those.
The other thing I wanted to say, you know, about those is when I lived in downtown Toronto, the Value Village was like full of those. You know, you could find almost any washed up 70s celebrity on one of those glasses. And I used to kind of like pick and choose.
How dare you? How dare you call Gary Sandy washed up? Wait, is this like a Canadian thing? Like actors that do stuff here, they go to Canada?
Well, like Stage West Dinner Theater was like, obviously, they gave away these glasses that had the actor's face on it. And it was probably like, you know, you keep the glass if you buy this fancy drink, which I am obsessed with, you keep the glass. When my grandparents passed away, I found these really weird 80s glasses with straws, and it says New Wave in neon. And I can't imagine my grandpeople drinking a beverage out of these, you know, like.
It must have been a gift.
No, they went to Vegas. Somebody must have. And they bought this, and they brought these home. And it's like, and no wonder they were in a box under the stairs, because they're so flashy and garish, you know, and it's like, I can never throw these
out. Washed up 70 actors. Dinner theater glasses. I swear, I would think you'd have an entire case filled with these.
I'm surprised. Like, I'm so angry at me too now.
I don't think I know you at all.
By the way, the Norman Fell is broken, and I refuse to throw it out. It's still upstairs.
You're still drinking from it with a big
cut
big
lip,
bit of glass missing, but your lip just cut. No, I'm not throwing it out.
Oh, I had a Don Adams at one time too.
Yeah. Oh, come on. That's like the Mount Rushmore of 70s, you know, dinner theater
faces
or broke whatever.
John Adams, I threw him out, though. So.
John Adams, Bob Kane, Robert Crane.
Oh, I
love
Bob Kane.
And Norman Fell. My God. Please get on that. That's your new collecting. That's what you got to get now.
It won't cost
anybody out there that has. Anybody out there listening that has any of these or that knows what we're talking about, because it's completely foreign to me. Please take pictures of whatever you've got and post them or talk about this stuff, because this is becoming a fascination for me. This is the second time you've mentioned the Gary Sandy
thing. Yeah, I don't think they do it anymore. I don't think that, like, I, you know, I've never been to dinner theater, so I don't know, but.
I mean, I can picture the whole thing. I can picture the scene, and, you know, it's a thing you see in a movie. It's like a cliche sort of thing, like, I need work, get me work. Yeah. Well, I've got this dinner theater thing, and.
I think it was pretty lucrative at the time, because it seemed.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, not like but just, you know, you'd rather be on a series, but you'd go and do. You know, you got to start collecting this stuff. Well, there we go. There's our Dick Miller episode. I hope you enjoyed the 5 minutes we spent on Dick Miller. And
no disrespect to Walter Paisley, by the way. I really liked him. I did want to point out one little thing that surprises me. Do you know in Pulp Fiction, when they go to dump off the car and Julia Sweeney's there and it's Monster Joe? Monster Joe's truck? Dick Miller had his scenes cut, but he was Monster Joe.
Oh, I did know that. That was, I knew that from either a making of or something on one of the DVD extras or something. I think I did know that.
And he's in two films that influence you and I probably both enjoy. Mine, he's in Rock and Roll High School, because I'm a huge Ramones fan, which is directed by Robert Zemeckis. Is he Zemeckis?
No, wait. Zemeckis did Can't Buy Me Love. Rock and Roll High School I forget who that.
Oh, it was.
That's the one with the Ramones and PJ Souls.
Yeah,
right?
Not Zemeckis. That's the guy from, he's another Corman guy. Alan Arkrush. Didn't he?
Oh, yes, you're right, that's right. Yeah.
What I Want to Hold Your Hand is the Beatles film, that Zemeckis film.
Oh, sorry. I Want to Hold Your Hand, which I nearly picked up the other day. I was at Amoeba. It was a cheap copy. I almost
Dick Miller's in that as well.
Who was he in, was he like the coach in Rock and Roll High School? Who was he in Rock and Roll High School?
Remind me. If I recall correctly.
Okay. You know who else is in Rock and Roll High School?
Clint Howard?
Someone whose name, but one of the two, you know, the two nerdy, doofusy guys that are like, they're not doofusy, but they're sort of the suck-ups.
To the principal, the two creeps, yeah.
Yeah, one of those creeps is the voice of Robin on Batman the Animated Series.
No way. Ew.
Yeah, and I can't think of his name. Kevin Conroy was Batman.
Yes.
Somebody was Robin, and that was one of the first things he ever did was Rock and Roll High School, and I don't know if he even has a line in it, but he's.
Yeah, he has a couple of lines. They're creeps.
Oh, he does.
Right?
Okay. Yes. As soon as you hear his voice, you'll recognize.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Yes. It's Robin from Batman the Animated Series.
No way! I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I also want to just
Lyle Wagner
before we close, and I've never seen this. There is a 2014 documentary called "That Guy Dick Miller." That really like to see. I haven't seen it, and
how do you see it?
I don't know. I'm going to figure it out. But it's basically a documentary celebrating Dick Miller's acting career.
Really?
Yeah.
That is the kind of thing that would be on. The kind of thing that would be you'd think would be on like a Netflix or something or a streaming service
of some kind. And I'm going to try and dig it out. Hopefully it's on something I can get in Canada, because I think that would be a fitting tribute to Dick Miller. Let's seek that out and watch it.
Hell yeah. Anybody got any ideas? Let us.
Yeah. If you could.
Lauren Lester. Lauren Lester is the guy who played Robin on Batman the Animated Series.
Okay.
And he was in Rock and Roll High School. Yeah. Why I should know that and why it should ever come up and anybody should care, no idea. But clearly it was up there somewhere and needed to get out. And now it finally found a way.
Wow.
Now we know that.
I'm
know
happy
that.
You did. But I guess that makes kind of sense.
Factoid.
Because, oh, yeah, he was the guy with the big creepy afro.
Yes, that's him. And I saw it again a few years back. I hadn't seen it in forever. And it, you know, he shows up on screen. I'm like, is that? You know, and I recognize him from the interviews that he's done. He's a character actor guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there you go.
That was a movie I couldn't actually get into with my kid. I tried to make her watch Rock and Roll High School, and she was like, no.
Isn't there a line, was it Dee Dee that has a line like, let's get some pizza or something?
Yeah, it's Joey.
Joey?
I can't, whatever
it is, I remember this making of with PJ Soul that whichever Ramon it was, they literally had one line.
it was Dee Dee, yeah.
And it was like, let's get some pizza or something, and he could not get the words out. They had to do like 75.
That would be Dee Dee Ramone. Yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
It's sort of like the way like Ace Frehley and Peter Criss, I think their voices are dubbed in that terrible
movie. They were probably so shit in Russia that they went, just don't give them any lines. We'll get someone else to.
I was like 8, and it's like, why does Peter Criss have Zan from the Super Friends voice?
I just love the people just imagining the scenes behind and being like, oh god, we're never going to get to the scene with the pizza and Ramon guy and like, you know, do another take, and it's just one line he couldn't get through. I just love that shit. Well, there you go. There's our Dick Miller tribute, sponsored by Rock and Roll High School and the works of Lauren Lester.
The works of Lauren Lester.
Gary Sandy.
Right now, Gary.
Dick Miller tribute, 8 minutes on Dick Miller, 45 on everything else we've ever done.
A long time on me not seeing Gremlins.
Well, that's sort of about Dick Miller. That's kind of related.
Yeah. You know what I always hate is when I've run a forum for like 20 years and you find out an actor died and you put RIP, you know, whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the first post after is someone goes, never heard of him. And you just like, well, it was all about you, so I'm glad you told me that.
What is that in aid of? What's the point of that?
A lot of toy collectors do that.
Well, that I believe. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah. I always just kind of scratched my head at that one, like, all right.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. Well, you know, crap.
That's almost as bad as the whole, well, you've heard of, you know, blah, blah. It's like, when was it made? I don't know, 1965? Oh, I wasn't born then. What? I don't understand that logic. So you're only aware of things? Have you heard of World War II? You know, that was before you were born, too. Like, that was a thing.
Did you not have parents? You know, like...
That just makes me insane. And it's said with a straight face, like, oh, well, now I know why I don't know, you know, who the Beatles are. That was before I was born. Or, you know, whatever it might be. Like, oh, shit, sorry. I'm sorry.
Sorry,
you're right.
You're right.
My bad for trying to tell you as a comedian who Peter Sellers was. Because you've mentioned you're a comedian and you love... But I thought I'd throw that out there, and I figured, you know, you might have an idea. You never heard of him. Never. Oh, right, right. Yeah, he died before you were born. I'm stupid. I'm sorry for putting you in that position. I don't know who Peter Sellers is.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, this is a stand-up. Somebody I was talking to at a thing, and I don't know what joke I made or something, and she was going on about how much she loved this and that and certain things. And I said, well, you did a bit to kind of remind me of Peter Sellers a little bit. Say who? Peter Sellers. You know, I didn't say the Goon Show, the radio show.
Yeah,
Peter Sellers. That's when I kind of walked away too, thinking, oh boy, maybe I've hit that wall with like shit. People know what I'm talking about anymore because I'm older and they're didn't know who Peter Sellers was. Like, wow.
But oh, well, that really old movie, and you saw that movie in high school? That's my favorite one.
Yeah, it's happening. Anyway, there you go. Yeah. There's a mini. Never let it be said.
Yeah.
We don't do what we say we're going to do sometimes.
We're going to create lots of quality product this year.
That's right. Starting with our
T-shirts. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Sorry.
With our T-shirts.
Thanks, everybody.
With Gary Sandy's face on him. All right.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for listening. Take care. Bye. Bye.